Hi, everyone, and welcome to Oscar Wild, a podcast about film, always counting down to next year's Oscars. I'm Sophia Simonello.
And I'm Nick Ruhrkraut.
And today we have a very fun episode planned. We will be talking about one of the biggest movies of the summer, Twisters, which was directed by Lee Isaac Chung, who was Oscar nominated for Minari a few years ago. And as we review Twisters, we'll also talk about the 1996 film Twister, which we grew up with.
Yeah, I was really excited with this coming out. I think it's a perfect summer blockbuster movie that we haven't really had so far this year. I guess Inside Out 2 could be one of those, totally different kind of movie. But I had a blast. I can't wait to talk about it. And I think a lot of audiences are too. The box office numbers are through the roof, through expectations, and I love to see that. I think it's the perfect opportunity to again go to the theater, experience this. I've seen also a lot of videos of the 4DX experience. Like, people like before Twisters in 4DX, and after it's just like they're drenched. It's like they just went on Splash Mountain at Disney World. And it is just incredible content. And we'll talk about Glenn Powell and all the actors and what we think. But there's a lot in here to love, I think.
I didn't realize that 4DX screenings had a water feature. Yes. I thought that people were just making that joke about Glenn Powell, sorry. And I didn't believe it until I saw a picture of someone's seat with the little buttons.
I didn't know you could pick which things, or maybe that's the only option, is like, I would rather not get wet today. Yes, please. But there was somebody who was like, if they give me a hat, if Glenn Powell comes in, I'm turning on the water feature. So that was fun to see that.
Well, what a great way to start this episode. But yeah, like you were saying with the box office, this had an $80.5 million opening weekend, way ahead of projections. And I think it just shows, one, it shows that Glenn Powell is a movie star, first and foremost. And the American numbers were particularly strong, which I think isn't surprising. But I know personally a lot of people from the Midwest, and you can comment on this too if you know, were really excited to see this movie. We didn't grow up in Tornado Alley or anything like that, but we had tornado drills in school all the time, grew up loving Twister. And I think people were just excited to see what this movie had in store. It's not fully a sequel in the way that Top Gun Maverick is. I think I was expecting that, something to be kind of like a legacy sequel 20-some years after the original's release. So I think people were attached to that, and they just wanted to have a good, fun summer movie. And I think for the most part, it's really successful, especially in creating a really exciting cinematic experience. I do have my wishes, I would say, for what could have been, but we can get into all of those as we talk through it.
Yeah, so let's do our normal intro, and then we'll talk about opinions and lots of discussion. So Twisters, the description: haunted by a devastating encounter with a tornado, Kate Cooper gets lured back to the open plains by her friend Javi to test a groundbreaking new tracking system. She soon crosses paths with Tyler Owens, a charming but reckless social media superstar who thrives on posting his storm-chasing adventures. As storm season intensifies, Kate, Tyler, and their competing teams find themselves in a fight for their lives as multiple systems converge over central Oklahoma. This was directed, like you said, by Lee Isaac Chung. It stars Glenn Powell, Daisy Edgar Jones, Anthony Ramos, Brennan Perea, Maura Tierney, my favorite that I did not expect to see, and a few more that we'll mention also. The first name we mentioned, Lee Isaac Chung. There was also a Q&A at my screening with Lee Isaac Chung, Glenn, Daisy, and Anthony.
Wait, what? I didn't know this.
Oh my God, I just assumed, I guess, that you knew.
No, I didn't. Maybe you posted about it or something and I forgot, or I was jet lagged, but wow, I didn't know that. Okay, that changes the experience here a bit, knowing
totally
that you were in Glenn's presence.
Oh yeah, I mean, people came in with cowboy hats on, people had signs of like Ride It, like there was just a lot going on. The audience overall was very good. This was at Lincoln Square. Having them all there, obviously incredible. They told a few stories about filming and production, which I really loved. And the moderator was fantastic. It's like they were all friends and they were talking about Daisy being a DJ and so many fun things. Anthony, like, just learning how to drive 3 years ago. And then you see him in this movie driving backwards, like, very cool things. But they also shouted out Minari, and I really loved it because the theater just totally exploded in applause for that.
Aww.
And he totally deserves it. I think, you know, this is a great follow-up to Minari. The first shot we get is, like, from the grass of Daisy's character, Kate, walking to her team. And I think it has those personal touches that you really wouldn't expect in a blockbuster. So I do like that this was his follow-up. Is it extremely different? Yes. But I think he was still able to rein in some of his control, even though I think Universal had most of the power in terms of this being a sequel and a mostly different cast than the original. We can talk about that. And not having any connection to Bill Paxton and Helen Hunt from the original, because Lee Isaac Chung said that they just didn't make that connection for him. There was no communication. And that's, I don't know, really upsetting to me, kind of in a weird way, that they wouldn't try to pass the torch and maybe include more things. Like, I was expecting cows to be flying, you know, just as a little joke, but that wasn't the case. So for whatever reason, they are different enough. And I really did appreciate that.
So you mean, like, the connection in terms of, like, original actors, like Helen Hunt didn't want to be involved, or like the initial collaborators in terms of, like, crew or anything like that?
They did say some of the crew was the same, but yeah, I guess just the actors and this being a quote-unquote sequel and you saying that it's not really that. But even just a cameo, we like we love a cameo. Like, even just, yeah, Helen Hunt in passing, maybe. You know, we have Dorothy. That's not a person, but just the little things along the way. I think that heightens the experience for people who love Twister or are familiar with it.
Yeah, I think that would have been helpful because for me, like, there were a few touches that reminded me of the original, like, little things here and there that characters would do, where if you just watched the movie recently or if you're a really big fan of it, you might have caught on to, but they were really small things. Like, at one point, Kate asks if Tyler wants anything to drink and she's going to go get him drinks, and that's the same way she says it is similar to when we see that scene in Twister with Joe and Melissa getting the lemonades inside. So it just, like, reminds you of little things like that, but it's so different in that it really doesn't have any connective tissue besides theme and location. And the things I think that I struggled with in the movie, I didn't necessarily struggle with because I grew up with the original, but because I think it does set you up to feel a particular way about how things might end up. But I saw it in London at the BFI IMAX, which was a really great experience because, so I'm from Ohio, and we, like I said at the beginning of the episode, grew up with tornadoes, like, just grew up talking about them. That was kind of the natural disaster that we were familiar with in our region of the country. We did tornado drills in school. We knew the difference between tornado watch and warning. If you hear that there's a tornado, you go outside to look at it. That is real. And like a very specific thing that they add, I think, in Twister and in Twisters that was very funny to me. But seeing the British audience, absolutely hilarious, because in this movie, there is also a British character, this reporter who's from London, tagging along with Tyler and his team to wrangle these tornadoes, right, and put them on TikTok and YouTube. So they really enjoyed this character. We're like laughing along with him, but we're also terrified of the tornadoes, which I thought was very funny because to me, like, no matter how scary you make them in movies, it's just not going to be as scary to me as like a tsunami, for instance, something that I don't have experience with. But then also what I was going to say is that it was also just funny to me because this movie is almost painfully American.
Yeah.
The country soundtrack. I wanted to ask you what you thought about that, because there are so many country songs in this movie. And at one point, like there's one when Kate like returns back home and it's talking about you can't take the girl out of Oklahoma. So it was very funny to watch with a really British audience. But it was great to see it in IMAX. Like the sound, oh, yeah. I think, and the visual effects were really impressive. There were also quite a few great set pieces in the movie that I'm really glad that I got to see on that scale and not just like a little Alamo Drafthouse theater that I usually go to when I'm here.
Yeah, I think just all of the components work for me. The visual effects were also a bit more believable. Obviously, I don't remember what it looked like when I saw it for the first time, but rewatching it now, the visual effects don't really hold up in terms of the tornado. So I loved all of that this time around. The sound, the editing, the camera, it just felt like you were constantly in motion, whether there was a storm or not. Like in the rodeo sequence before the storm hits, you're still moving around with the bull riders and it just keeps you moving. And I think that helped in terms of the runtime because it is a bit longer than the original two. I think it's like almost 2 hours and 15 minutes this time. To your point about London, loved Harry Haddon Patton's character, Ben, as the comic relief. He's also in About Time, which is like, why did you look so familiar? But with his character, I like that he was kind of the mirror of Jamie Gertz's character, Dr. Melissa Reeves, from the first movie. And I think if you watch them back to back, you'll see a lot more parallels than if you're watching even a month apart, because I think the structure is pretty similar. I didn't really notice it on my viewing, though, but I think the scenes do match up in the end. Again, I think it's enough of a change where I wasn't concerned with or aware of that. I also loved how he deals with villains and like who the villain is and how that kind of changes throughout the movie, keeping you more aware of the characters and their purpose and who's friends with who or against each other. And then to your point about the soundtrack, I left the theater. I was like, I'm now a cowboy. I love country music.
Wait, what?
I think the soundtrack was incredible.
This is such a shock. I'm sorry. It's taking me a second.
I don't usually listen to country music. It is like a summer vibe that I'll allow it.
Yeah.
But I think it fits perfectly with what you're saying about this being such an American movie. Like this is in the heartland. We're in Oklahoma in tornado territory. And like anything can happen. But the soundtrack is nearly 30 songs on it, and I've just been listening through it. I couldn't tell you what song is where, but I think it's a lot of fun. But I think that'll help with audiences too. Mm-hmm. I think with that, the score is like the original, which I really liked because that's super majestic, and we're seeing all these vistas of the sweeping landscapes and the plains. So I think that matches up pretty well. But in the Q&A, they were all kind of saying how they felt about the music and that it does match up really well. And I felt that entirely during my viewing.
This is so funny. This is like that video that's been going around of Glenn Powell shotgunning the Miller Lite on stage with Luke Combs. And I am so into him in this video. And I just think, like, no matter how long I've been in New York or, mm-hmm. you know, I am still at the end of the day a girl who went to a Big Ten school.
Daisy not really knowing how to shotgun was also really cute. She just
and
handed
him
it to
taking
Glenn
it and doing it again. Oh, I know.
And then your point about New York, I'll just say, because you mentioned London, mm-hmm. there are a few scenes in the beginning in New York, and I felt like people were really living in that because I saw it in New York. Mm-hmm. So when they're in the office or walking across the street and she's like, people are nice. I'm like, LOL. And the cab almost hits her like, no, they're not. What are you talking about?
Not compared to Oklahoma. I thought the soundtrack was a little too much. The score is fine. The soundtrack, it's jam-packed. It is just like a song every minute. Mm-hmm. And they're, mm-hmm. it's hard to distinguish some of them. But I do think what you're telling me is that you're going to be pushing Ain't No Love in Oklahoma for original song so that we can talk about it in the Contender series. Future Oscar nominee Luke Combs.
I mean, is that the only original song or are they mostly all original?
They're mostly all original, but that one was released as a single ahead of the soundtrack. So I feel like that would be the one that people would attach to. So because we're going to do a lot of comparisons to the original Twister, let's just talk about that one a little bit and connect it to this. So in Twister, Helen Hunt plays a meteorologist named Joe Harding, who is about to divorce her husband, Bill. But before they separate, they team up to develop a weather alert system and start chasing tornadoes again together. And this was directed by Jan DeBont and stars Bill Paxton, Helen Hunt, like I mentioned, Jamie Gertz, Carrie Elwes, Philip Seymour Hoffman, Lois Smith, Todd Field. His filmography is great. Like this and Eyes Wide Shut. Then you have Tar and Little Children and In the Bedroom. Perfection. And Alan Ruck also. But we're also talking about this because this was nominated for 2 Oscars, Best Sound and Best Visual Effects. So let's put a pin in that and we can talk about Oscar potential for this one later. But I think it's this really fun, silly disaster movie that I think works really well. I think part of that is also nostalgia. Growing up in the 90s, this was a movie that was on TNT a lot in that time and in the early 2000s. And it had a rewatchability factor. And I think Twisters does for audiences too. Twister and Twisters both start with very harrowing scenes for the main character. Because in the original Twister, we see Joe as a little girl and a tornado comes in the middle of the night. And there's this scene when they're running from their house to the storm shelter. You almost think that their dog isn't going to make it. That always makes me so nervous. And then her dad is violently blown away by the tornado. It is so shocking when you watch it. And I remember that terrifying me as a child. But also to note that young Joe is played by none other than Alexa Vega from Spy Kids and Sleepover. Mm-hmm. But in Twisters, I actually think that the scene is even better. The opening sequence, I think, is really scary. And it's this very, right, like long, extended moment in the film where we get to know Kate as a character and the group of people she's working with. They're all college students, I believe, pursuing this grant, and they're trying to like test out her experiment, her hypothesis. And she is pretty reckless, pretty determined and stubborn with it. And the tornado is much bigger than they think it's going to be. The fact that she and Javi are the only two survivors seeing Kiernan Shipka get blown away like that by the tornado. Wild. And then, of course, her boyfriend, Daryl McCormick, him at the very end of that sequence. I mean, it's very violent. That's the thing. It's just like, it's very, very dark. And it's a pretty devastating way to open the movie and to set the scene for Kate, especially as a character. And I think that comes down to really Lee Isaac Chung's direction, which I actually think is pretty strong. I think there's a lot of love for this land here and the space and what it looks like. I think you can really tell that he grew up there. And in these more wordless scenes or where there's not a lot of dialogue and we're just seeing the action, I think that's when the movie is at its strongest. So I thought this was a really great way to open it.
There are a lot of visual parallels here too with other scenes in Twister, like when they're holding onto the pole at the very end and they're trying not to get swept away from this final F5, I think, tornado. So I like little things like that. It does have this little flashback almost feel to it, how we're starting the movie and getting to know these characters. I think violent is how you have to do this, though, to not really exaggerate, but to show how powerful these tornadoes are. Like, I've never experienced one, been in one, or I don't know if I've ever seen one, but it's scary. And later in the movie, they'll show aerial shots, drone shots of these towns just being flattened by these tornadoes and the effect it has on those people. And Twister did that as well, which I like, which adds to the set pieces you mentioned and I think how realistic they look.
The tornadoes are far more destructive of humans in Twisters compared to Twister. I think when I think back on Twister, we have one major scene in the middle of the film where it's pretty devastating. And then, of course, the opening. But it's really, I think, about the central characters and the team chasing them. And here, it's kind of amazing how many people in Oklahoma seem to have never seen a tornado before in some of the scenes, which I thought was very funny. But I think the ramping up the number of tornadoes and the destruction and the wreckage from them is part of the point that even though Lee Isaac Chung says he didn't want to make a message movie about climate change, I think that's where you really feel it, is that the planet is getting warmer. It's getting more difficult to inhabit this Earth, and this increase in natural disasters is all a part of that. So I feel like even though he doesn't explicitly make it an issue, the pure occurrence of these tornadoes is a huge part of that.
I think he does more here than we did in the original, because Jo Harding was all about her sensors and trying to track what the tornado looks like from the inside. We get a better sense of that with it affecting the Lois Smith character, Meg Green, Joe's aunt. And I think that gives a more personal effect to that. But I felt here he mentioned it a few times of like climate change and there being more tornadoes recently. And that's something that is real. Like this past year, they saw more tornadoes in this season than they had before. So it wasn't overkill, but I think if they mentioned it one more time, it would have kind of set me back a little, because I felt like they did get that across pretty strongly this time.
Yeah, it's, I think the one of the things, though, that frustrated me a bit, or, you know, kept me from fully loving it really is the script. So Lee Isaac Chung didn't write the script. The script was written by Mark L. Smith. So Joseph Kosinski did contribute the story, mentioning that because of Top Gun Maverick, of course, and there people are going to compare the two films now, especially with box office being as strong as it is. But Mark L. Smith wrote The Midnight Sky and The Boys in the Boat, two George Clooney films that I didn't find particularly successful, and of course The Revenant. But I think the thing with the screenplay here is that there is just too much going on. There's so much happening, and there are so many different, I think, loose threads in the film. For example, Kate, she's working in New York, and then she ends up getting pulled back to Oklahoma by Javi, who now works for this company called Stormpar. And there's this whole bit of the movie where we start to learn a little bit about who Stormpar is and why their work is potentially problematic. And then there's this thread about formal education and who is most like well-equipped, I think, to try to learn more about these tornadoes. And there's one character who is buying up all the land, but we don't get to know that character or really anything about that. And I thought, is this like a King Hale, Noah Cross type of situation here where he's the real villain? But then we also have David Corenswet, who is sort of playing a cartoon villain of sorts, who's like this irritating by the book guy who also seems a bit misogynistic. There are so many things happening, whereas in the original, I think it's very clear that yes, it is about science and it's about the tornadoes, but it's also this great romance. And here, I feel like it can't make up its mind on what it is, because if it's fine if you don't want it to be a romance, it's okay if you have a, you know, a woman and a man on screen and they're not romantically involved. But here they lay out traps for you to make you think that this is happening, and then it's a sort of love triangle story too, because Javi clearly likes Kate, and then you have Glenn Powell, who we still really need to talk about, but you've Glenn Powell looking like that in the movie, and you don't have them get together, but you also make the audience think that you will. I think that was very frustrating for me to watch.
Overall, I liked the story more, but I do agree with some of these points. Like whenever Kate was around Javi and Javi was doing his business deals with that guy in the cowboy hat, Javi would never let her be around. And I'm like, okay, are we going to learn like who this guy is and why he is evil beyond Kate having to Google him. And then the end of that story kind of feels abrupt because it doesn't really end. But to my point about the villains in the story, it's like, first off, when we meet Tyler, he is like the initial villain. And this is similar to Twister 2 with the two feuding groups and Tyler's leading the other one. And Kate just recognizes his demeanor and his like macho sense about him very quickly. So all of that little humor and her fighting him off, I really liked. But then once we meet Marshall, he's the new villain and potentially Javi as well, because we don't really understand what their deal is and why they're buying up this land from people who have just have their homes taken from them. Their land is almost useless at this point because they have to rebuild. And then in the end, I mean, there are other characters that are somewhat villainous, but in the end, it's the Twisters, the Tornadoes themselves that are the villains against the people in these towns and really the world. So it does change a lot. And I think most of it is done pretty fluidly, but I do agree that like in the end, there may be some plot holes or loose ends that either don't matter enough to the core story that they feel like it's okay if it's left that way, or they're hoping that you forget about it by the end of the movie and are swept up with either the romance or these new connections that we've made and how they make it a bit more heartwarming through the final, I guess, half of the movie.
I agree. Like, I do think ultimately the Tornadoes are the villain. And the scene that makes this the clearest is actually one of my favorite moments in the film, which is a parallel to this drive-in scene that we get in Twister where everyone's watching The Shining and a tornado comes through, where here they're watching, I believe, Frankenstein, like an old classic film, which I love that they have rep screenings in Oklahoma. That's great. We need more independent cinemas, and this is a really beautiful theater. But the screen literally rips away, and we see the tornado like it's its own kind of spectacle. And I thought that that was very creative, and I really, really liked that. That was one of the, I think, the scarier scenes in the movie, too, that made it feel like the Tornadoes were the real villains and that everyone had to band together. And by that point in the movie, too, it becomes clearer, I think, that even though lines have been drawn and we think differently about some of the characters, that Javi is maybe different from the other people at the company, and that he and Tyler are working together really to help Kate and everyone else and all the people of the town that this tornado is ripping through.
That was my favorite shot of just seeing the full movie theater and the tornado, like, movies as a window to the world outside. I felt was just like a very unique visual cue that I really loved. And by that point, you don't really have a sense of who could live or die. So I think the immediacy of this storm and Kate kind of going out to, because of her guilt or, you know, wanting to save these people, is doing the right thing. And you're like, someone's flying in the air. We don't know how this is going to end, which made that more exciting for me. And you feel more scared for these characters. I liked that it wasn't overtly sexual. We didn't have like sex scenes and all of this romantic drama. I think it's maybe because of the love triangle of it all, which felt between Javi and Kate totally different. Luca's version of Twisters would not be this.
No, it would not.
Glenn Powell would have been shirtless at some point.
We need the sauna. We need an Oklahoma sauna.
Even Glenn Powell's Tyler wasn't overtly sexualized. Yes, they talked about in the Q&A about his white t-shirt and it raining, but it wasn't like they threw buckets of water on him and you could like see through it.
But why not? No, I'm just kidding. Not really. I think it's a family film. Like, it doesn't need to be overtly sexual or anything like that. But I think that I really liked at the beginning of the movie how there is this back and forth between Kate and Tyler, how they're so different. He's kind of flirting with her, and you might think it will be this kind of like enemies to lovers situation. And I love that trope. I think it's very fun in a rom-com or a romantic drama. And ultimately, a lot of disaster movies have soap opera qualities to them. And I think I wanted this movie to lean into that more because they just tease us a little bit with it and don't go all the way with it. And I found Javi as a character to be a little annoying. And I just wanted Kate and Tyler to get together, really. And I understand like why they're introducing the love triangle idea or that these two men might both like her, but it just didn't go where it needed to go. I think you need to push it to a place like Challengers, or you need to have the character that's right for her end up with her. Or if it's Boone, the Brandon Perea character, and Tyler, that's fine too. Or something else, but you know, I needed, I think, a little more of that. And I think you can do that without steering into cliche, because I know that that's been a lot of the commentary on the movie as to why they didn't include the kiss or they didn't take it there, is that they didn't want it to turn into a cliche. But I think that some of the cliche is what makes it fun. It's what people expect from these movies. And I think if you're already putting in a lot of tropes that we're familiar with, why not take the story there to a conclusion, I feel like, that feels a bit more satisfying?
It's interesting because I think we both enjoy the original, maybe more for nostalgia's sake, but we also like this one, but for different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like the original one is too melodramatic, and while they are storm chasers, most of the drama relies on them, at least initially, trying to get a divorce, having Joe sign the papers because she missed a signature. And then just about halfway through the film, Melissa hears Bill say to Joe during one of their tornado chases that he's like, "I'm here. Like, don't you see me?"
Yeah.
And then from there on out, her character's like out of the picture pretty much. And it's her realizing that she's going to go back home. Their marriage isn't going to work despite that ring and how big it is. I love her character in the first movie.
She's amazing. Yes.
So I felt like the divorce was too much of the drama there. And I think here I liked that it was mostly the tornadoes and some of the climate change theme and just the chasing. There was a lot of driving, which we did have some in the first movie, and that it was just really high paced. And I was okay with the romance being on the back burner, but I think mostly because I felt like it was going in the direction of her picking one of the men. Like, once she goes back home and she resets, she's like a kind of lost all sense of my own identity.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes back to her mom because she hasn't seen her in a long time. That from there, and I think Maura Tierney adds this extremely real human personality to her so that Kate can have this realization. And then Tyler comes there and kind of tries to learn more about her and helps her with her model that she created as a teenager in school. And I felt like that development was enough for me. And I think that's okay though too, that if you wanted more in the end than I did.
You know what this all goes back to? You being a science person and me being a liberal arts person. That's fully what this is, because what works for me about the original is the romance. Like, it is that idea that she's skipped a page of the divorce papers and that her attitude when Melissa's asking her if she still loves him, and she just kind of looks at her. It's like, it's time to go. And the fact that their passion that they have for tornado chasing is what brings them together again in the end. And it's this like very intimate, high drama situation. And it makes them realize that they are so similar. They're both really stubborn and can be hot-headed, but they just, it feels like a real, like, adult romance between two characters, I think, who think that they've lost something with each other, but then find it by spending all this time together in the end doing something that they love. And I think that that final scene with the two of them is really great, where they're like running and they go into that barn and finally Dorothy works And then, of course, we get the kiss at the end. And it's this big payoff. And it just feels like this fun, again, very nostalgic 90s romance that's also a disaster movie. So that is, for me, the pull to the original. And I'm not like a huge Helen Hunt fan. Like, I do not like As Good As It Gets or her win for that movie. But I don't know. There's something about her as Jo that does really work for me, especially opposite Bill Paxton. I feel like both of them are also really evenly matched as scientists, as personalities. And I like the chemistry between the two of them. And in Twisters, I think that the science is there. Like, specifically, like, the science dialogue is sort of how I feel like when I watch Succession or when I watch Industry. I think, okay, this is an industry that I'm not a part of, finance or politics, and here, meteorology. But I'm enjoying hearing them explain it to each other and talk at this high level. Like, there is something fun that I like about that sort of talky approach. But here I felt like I wanted more chemistry between Daisy Edgar Jones and Glenn Powell, because if you watch their interviews together, if you watch them on Hot Ones, if you watch them doing any of the press for this movie, they seem like they have great chemistry. But when I watched it, it just wasn't there. It wasn't there on her part. It really just seemed like she just wasn't giving, I think, much as Kate, which is hard to say. I think some of that comes down to the writing. But I found myself not really caring much about her as a character, I think, especially compared to Jo in Twister. And unfortunately, because of Tyler and Glenn Powell's charisma in that part, I felt like it kind of dulled her shimmer a little bit anytime he was on screen with her.
And I think putting her at the center of the movie here, so she's our central character, she's the heart of the movie, and it's her having to decide, I guess, which route to go on. And that's maybe where it locked a little for me, that I didn't fully connect with her. There's one really emotional scene that she has, and I kind of wish she would have taken it further in that moment and maybe broken down a bit more. But that's the only, like, criticism I have of her. I think she did a great job. She's not a huge star like Glenn Powell as we know him right now. Like, this has been 2 huge years for him. I also think, like, if he's not already a star, like, this just solidifies that even more. And with her, I think a lot of audiences who have watched Normal People connect her to that, and that being her big star breakthrough performance. So it's hard because that's also a TV show, and this is not a very emotional drama like that show was as well.
I'm not as sold on her, I would say, but we'll see. Glenn Powell, on the other hand, I thought that, like, his charisma as Tyler was excellent. He reminded me a lot of Colby Donaldson, for our Survivor fan listeners, from season 2, All-Stars and Heroes versus Villains. He has those very white teeth.
Another
I wish
cowboy.
They would have let him be from Texas instead of Arkansas, but just a minor quibble. But I feel like, because anytime he wasn't on screen, I wanted him back on screen. I found that once we were introduced to him, I needed him in every frame of the movie.
Yeah. Who do you feel like, having seen the film, is the character with the most screen time? Or, like, whose essence do you feel the most after seeing the movie? Is it Glenn because we love him, or is it Daisy?
It's Glenn 100% because of the performance and because of his star power. Because for Daisy Edgar Jones, I was a bit skeptical of her even going into the movie, because she just, as an actress, doesn't really work for me. Where the Crawdads Sing, actually, in general, it's kind of amazing the performance we got from Paul Mescal in Normal People, because the Sally Rooney projects, I think, lead to somewhat dull acting in them. I think of Allison Oliver in Conversations with Friends, too. Joe Alwyn in that show. And Daisy Edgar Jones, less than that when she's in Normal People, but she doesn't, I think, reach the highs that Paul Mescal does with that. So even though I know she has more screen time, I know that probably, like, for a fact, this is her movie, her story. It's what Kate has to reckon with in this movie that's so important, in her past and thinking about how she can move forward and also how she's navigating these relationships. But it's entirely Glenn Powell for me at the end of the day when I think about this movie. I wanted to also ask you, because Glenn Powell has this smile, which is a huge part of, I think, the role and the performance and now his star persona. And I just wanted to ask you for your if you had any comments on it as a dentist, because anytime I mention teeth, I need to know, do they have veneers? How you feel about the smile as a whole? And since you've seen it in person.
Well, I'm certain that he doesn't have veneers, which is a plus for me, but they are just very flat and I can tell immediately when someone grinds their teeth. But that's what happens when you really grind your teeth, is that they flatten out. So if he doesn't have a night guard, please let me know. I will take a mold of your teeth and gladly make you one.
Do I need a night guard?
See, I can't tell with you. But with him, it's like his teeth are white, like they're really nice. But you can draw a line across them, and that's not necessarily a good thing.
Okay.
So that's the only thing I notice every time he smiles, and he has a really bright smile because he's always smiling and he's always with Brisket. And I wonder if he would get veneers, like being a new A-lister, if that's going to happen. Yeah, I don't know.
I hope not. I think because he already has a really good smile, I hope he doesn't. I hope he doesn't fall for the Hollywood veneer trap. Because I want him in a period film, too. I want him to play like someone in World War II. So you can't have veneers for that. Anyway.
I was going to say that was our other connection and maybe why you want more of the drama is that this wasn't like a super period piece kind of movie. And that romance in those, I feel like, is always heightened.
Well, yeah, I do love that. But it's just like a fun thing in disaster movies when that happens. But I also wanted to ask you, do you prefer this or The Towering Inferno?
I'm going to have to go with Twisters here. I fully loved it. Sorry, Faye Dunaway. But I was just totally dialed in this entire movie. And I had a great time, and that's all I wanted. I wasn't trying to look into the movie and find other deeper meanings. This is a summer, July movie that fits the bill and should and has with most audiences. So that's all I could have asked for. What about you with all of your 70s disaster movies and this?
Well, I prefer The Poseidon Adventure and The Towering Inferno simply because of the cast. God. I'm sorry, but if you have Paul Newman and Faye Dunaway in your movie, I'm going to pick it. And then for Poseidon Adventure, the image of Shelley Winters in that movie just always makes me laugh. And I think that's my favorite disaster movie. So I would definitely pick the Poseidon Adventure. And then Towering Inferno mostly just as a joke. But I do genuinely love some of the performances in that. I agree, though. I think Twisters is a really fun summer movie. Definitely see it with a crowd. Maybe I'll try the 4DX experience. I did IMAX and can recommend it in that format, but now I have to try 4DX. Did I tell you about how I accidentally saw Furiosa in 270 and I thought I was gonna get the worst migraine of my life?
What is that? It's like a
Nick,
the screen, listen, is huge.
I don't go to Regal because it's just not my, it's not my theater chain. Like, uh-huh. They're not really close to me. But I went to a Regal and didn't pay attention to the ticket, clearly, or the showing I was going to. And it was in 270, which, Google this, look at the wraparound screen. It was horribly unpleasant at first. It was just not what I was looking for. So much so that I actually think I need to see the movie again in a standard format.
How can you even look around?
You can't. It's like a video game. Did you go to COSI as a kid in Columbus? Or you probably had a science museum in Cleveland.
No, but we had the science center in Cleveland. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So it's like a simulation. That's what it feels like. You're just surrounded by it. Or like when you go to the planetarium.
Yeah.
It's just too much for a full movie. But the 4DX, I do want to try because I think it would just be big, dumb fun for Twisters.
Yeah, 270 is too much.
It was weird. It was not great. I think especially because I wasn't expecting it. They're just...
I
go to Film Forum and Metrograph with the most horribly uncomfortable seats ever. Like, I'm not looking for a high-tech experience at the time.
So you would pick hard wooden seat with barely any cushion over 270 again?
Absolutely. I saw Magnolia sitting in one of those seats. I feel like I can do anything. And the 270 experience is just not for me.
Yeah. You mentioned earlier that the original film was nominated mm-hmm. for 2 Oscars. Would you maybe repeat those Oscars for sound and visual effects here, or how do you feel about its potential?
So when we start doing our early Oscar predictions, you know, we start with the big categories. I think we just naturally think about acting first, and we think about screenplay, direction, picture. Those are the big things we think about. And for Tex, the only thing that's been in my mind this entire year is just how many nominations will Dune Part 2 get? And I haven't really been thinking about a lot of the other movies, I think, except for Joker Folie à Deux a little bit, just because Joker really overperformed and dominated in its year. And Gladiator 2 potentially is having some tech options. Now, I think with visual effects, it's possible for Twisters because these are big and they're showy, and I can just imagine them going to the Bake Off. Like, I can kind of see that happening. And I think with sound too, now that it's down to one category, I'm not so sure if it could repeat there. So I think its best chances are probably visual effects. And I wasn't really joking earlier when I said original song, because the soundtrack is something that people are talking about. It's a very music heavy movie. And I don't know how many films this year will have with original songs. I know that Emilia Perez has a few, but I know, like, We're Getting Wicked, but those songs already all exist. I would imagine maybe they have a new one in that, but I'm just not sure entirely what happens there. You know, who knows? Maybe Diane Warren has something that she's planning, something up her sleeve, but yeah, I would say visual effects and then song for Ain't No Love in Oklahoma by Luke Combs.
Yeah, I think there is some potential. I would say visual effects has a good chance. The other movie to think about, if it's coming, we haven't seen a trailer yet or haven't seen it pop up in any of the film festival listings yet, but Blitz is the other one that could be visual effect heavy and go in for sound and editing, something I think war pieces do really well at. They're very tech heavy, but I don't feel so confident about any above the lines. I don't think this is a picture scenario, and I don't necessarily think the one Oscar I'm going to give it even has potential there. But again, I think this being a blockbuster, it's fun. It's not so serious. I think the Academy will err on the side of more serious dramas. But I'm not saying this couldn't end up with like 1 or 2 nominations like the original. I think that's more of the extent of mm-hmm. movies like this, where they end up.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that makes sense. So I think I know your answer to this, but which movie do you prefer, Twister or Twisters?
Definitely Twisters. I rewatched the original recently and I came out of it feeling positive about it, but not like, oh my God, Twister, that was such a good 90s movie that I remember. I was a bit lower on it, and I think this, even with the longer runtime, I think its pacing really holds up and is just a really fun theater experience. I think it was just more on par with what I was expecting, and I was very happy with that. Do you prefer this one or the original still?
I prefer the original, but I kind of agree on rewatch that didn't love it as much as I remembered in my head. I thought, oh, you know, I might have just looked upon that more fondly in memory. And when I actually watched it, I thought it was fun, but not like the great movie that I remembered. But I don't think this is like Twisters is a steep drop off for me than that. I think it's just a really different exploration of similar things. But yeah, I definitely prefer the first one. I think the more I think about it.
I think visual effects wise, we didn't even talk about this, but in the original, I think the biggest, maybe apart from that end scene or at the drive-in theater, is them driving through that house. Like, they actually built a house and drove through it for this like 10-second sequence. And that's just one of the most awe-inspiring, quickest scenes for something like that. That I think it accomplished very well. And I was curious here, like, how are they going to one-up that? And it's a small thing in comparison, but shooting fireworks into a tornado and making that look real was just so dang cool. And I was so shocked by it that that's something that really stuck with me from my viewing.
That was a fun little detail and very appropriate for the Tyler character, I thought.
Yeah, for Tyler and Boone, just being like buck wild, driving into a tornado. And I loved how they like screws came out from the car to keep them in the ground.
We didn't even talk about this. That was my favorite because I thought it was so silly. There's no way this would work, but I love it. It would just drill down into the ground and suddenly they were fine. Everything could just, they could be in the middle of a huge tornado.
We need the National Weather Service to be like, this is fake. Do not try this at home.
Yeah.
Okay. So if you could give this movie one Oscar, what would it be?
I would give, I've already done this once this year, which is so.
Glenn Powell.
I'm so unserious. I would give Glenn Powell Best Actor.
Oh my God.
So,
that's great.
So stupid. But I really, he, for me, was the star of the movie. And like I said, when he wasn't on screen, I needed him to come back. He gave a performance that just reminded me of actually some of the movies that I grew up with. And I think he just brought a lot of heart to the movie and was the most memorable thing for me in the movie. And I'm not just saying that because of the white t-shirt scene or the way that he stands in the bed of the truck, anything like that. I genuinely think he gave a great performance. What is your serious answer?
My serious answer is for best editing for Tara Lynn A. Shropshire, who I think just understood the pacing really well. You know, kept us in on the action. I was maybe worried at some point that it would slow down and we would get this more serious conversational scene, but it really never happened. You know, even when we're in the rodeo with them while they're talking about their past, it immediately ratchets back up into the storm. And I just felt like I was constantly with the tornadoes. And I think with a movie like this, it can be hard to overdo things, but I don't feel like she did. So in the end, I was very happy I came out on a really big high. Was really excited to talk about it. It was also funny because during my screening, since you weren't in New York, we came in. It was so humid before. Oh, my God. It was just awful outside. Mm-hmm. Come outside. Huge storm. It is pouring rain. And even the streetlights are on flashing reds because something has happened. And I'm like, oh, we are living in Twisters right now. And I was just living for it. And like getting wet on the way to the train, I was like, I don't care. I'm still in this movie experiencing this.
You are the Glenn Powell of your own life.
I just needed a cowboy hat and a huge buckle belt. But yeah, no, I loved it. And I think that definitely incorporated that into the experience. Not the storm, but the editing.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe also the storm.
I think so far, like this is, even though Inside Out 2 has made more, like this is the movie of the summer that I think people are talking about. Long Legs too, which has been doing really well. But this, I think, is one that people are really enjoying. And I'm sad that Deadpool and Wolverine is going to take away its screens. So maybe I need to see it in 4DX tomorrow.
You should soon.
Well, that was a really fun discussion of Twisters. As soon as I saw the movie, I was very excited to record this because I knew we would have a lot to talk about. And next time on Oscar Wilde, we'll be doing another little original sequel review in honor of Alien Romulus coming out in August. We will be reviewing two Oscar winners, Alien and Aliens. I'm so excited to talk about these. Alien is one of my favorite movies of all time and has a very special place in my heart. And I think that Aliens is an action-packed, thrilling, pretty phenomenal sequel.
I'm excited to continue our back-to-back sequel discussion. Everyone go see Twisters while it's out. See it in a big theater. I think that helps with the overall experience, but the sound and having a big screen, having an audience who you can interact with was really fun. So totally recommend this. Thank you all for listening to this. Feel free to rate, review, and follow us on Instagram and Twitter. And also we have bonus content on our Patreon. We just released an episode on The Notebook, which was also really fun to record. So listen to that at www.patreon.com/OscarWilde.
Thanks, everyone. We'll see you next time.